Ryan McGee, you are the most North Carolina person that I know. And now that I think about it, I imagine multiple people feel that way about you.
I appreciate it. That's a fantastic compliment. And yes, if you listen to Marty McGee, you know I refer to hometown numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Lived there all over the state. And so, yeah, I'll take that as a huge compliment.
Well, so now I need to sort of start this thing formally by doing the thing that they teach us to never do, Ryan, at ESPN, which is ask you a series of yes or no questions given your authority on the subject matter. So are you ready for this?
Yes.
Is Duke North Carolina the greatest rivalry in college basketball?
Yes.
Is this game Saturday night, the Final Four matchup between Duke and Carolina, the first time they've ever met in the NCAA tournament, is this the most anticipated game ever in this rivalry?
Yes.
So if this is the greatest rivalry, yes. And if this is the most anticipated matchup in this rivalry's history, yes. The next question is pretty logical. Is this the most anticipated college basketball game ever?
Yes. It's not just because it's them. It's because of all the people who hate them. You're excited about the game. You maybe root for Duke. You maybe root for Carolina. Maybe you love Grant Hill. Maybe you love Michael Jordan. But even the people who hate these two teams, and man, there are so many of them, especially here in my home state, everyone will be watching, whether they want to admit it or not.
Sometimes as a sports fan, you experience these moments that make you feel like you're living in a simulation. Moments that feel like just a little too on the nose, like the sports gods maybe just don't care at all about subtlety. Because of course, yes, we are getting Duke Carolina for the very first time in the NCAA tournament. And of course we're getting it in not just the Final Four, but the final four for a coach who has been to more of them than anybody ever. A coach who, by the way, just happens to be one of the best and most irritating leaders in sports history. So today, we take you on a tour of North Carolina with our local guide, Ryan McGee, who catches you up on a blood feud that's unlike anything else college basketball has ever seen. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Thursday, March 31st. This is ESPN Daily. Ryan McGee, could you tell me about the first time that you personally saw Mike Krzyzewski?
Yes, and he was in trouble. You know, it was 1983. I've talked a lot and written about the fact that my father was an ACC football referee.
Yes.
And I would get credentials to games. And so, I mean, this is 1983 now, buddy. I'm a lot older than you are. You know, I'm in elementary school. It's Ronald Reagan's first term. I mean, we're watching movies on VCRs. You know, Miss Pac-Man. Return of the Jedi was number one at the box office in 1983. Jay Billis had a full head of hair.
Yeah, this is before Jay Billis took on the appearance of Mr. Pac-Man.
Yeah. Yeah, Professor X, right? He was not the Professor X of college basketball at this point. This is how long ago this was, right? I mean, the NCAA tournament was half the size that it is now, 32 teams. And so this is the universe that Mike Krzyzewski walks into in Durham, and his first couple seasons were bad. And I remember we're sitting in the press box, halftime of an ACC football game at Duke, and Mike Krzyzewski walks by. I'm sitting at a table with a bunch of old, crusty Tobacco Road sports writers. He's like, guys, thanks for coming. And, you know, we appreciate you supporting Duke Athletics and all stuff. And he walks off. And I remember one of those guys looks at me. He goes, that's some bitch. His ass about to get fired. And then he looks at me, you know, because I'm like 13. I'm sorry, I don't mean to use that kind of language. Like, it's all right, man. I just watched, you know, Smokey and the Bandit on the VCR. So, no, but if you had told me that day that he would still be coaching when I was decades older,
yeah,
and I would be covering him, there's no way. I thought he'd be gone at the end of the next season.
And so, Ryan, it's now clear to our audience, I think, from your accent that you're from North Carolina. Obviously, you're steeped in the lore of basketball in the state. But clarify for us here where you grew up yourself and who you rooted for.
I grew up in the Triangle in the 1980s. And for folks that don't know the Triangle, this is Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill. And there's a third university in that Triangle, and that's NC State. And I grew up a North Carolina State fan. I grew up a Wolfpack fan. And this is the part that people don't ever understand about this. So, you know, Tobacco Road has four schools. It's Wake, State, then Duke and Carolina, all of whom play basketball, and all of whom are sick of hearing about Duke and North Carolina. I moved to Connecticut, at Bristol, Connecticut. I took a job at ESPN right out of college. And I remember the question I got every day was, all right, so Duke and Carolina are playing, you know, who are you rooting for? And my answer was a meteor strike, right? A power outage.
Like how you moved to Bristol, Connecticut. You went to ESPN to get away from Duke.
Yeah. And the question's always, who do you root for? I want the sewer line to break at Cameron. That's what I'm rooting for. But in North Carolina, we have what we call the ABC Club. And I've always amended that with the ABCD Club, which is anybody but Carolina, and then anybody but Carolina or Duke. But even if you hate them, you have to appreciate that it is the greatest rivalry in college basketball, and it's right here in all of our backyards.
So just give us the cartography here, Ryan, because I understand that proximity is part of what distinguishes this entire enterprise.
Yeah, it's a 10-minute drive. Per the map, everybody says like 8 miles. And the reality is the bars in Durham, you will see North Carolina basketball players. And the bars on Franklin Street in Chapel Hill, you will see Duke students and Duke athletes. And so they're just 8 miles apart. I mean, it is literally, if you hit the red lights right, you can be there in 11 minutes. I've done it before. I've done it 100 times. I've covered basketball games at both schools on the same day. I've covered football games at both schools on the same day, baseball games. It's easy to do. Here's how close they are. I once covered a college football game at Duke when the parachutes came into the stadium to deliver the game ball at the wrong game.
Wait. What?
The guys were bringing in the game ball, supposed to be coming into Chapel Hill. They saw a football stadium full of people wearing blue.
Took a wrong left or something.
They come rolling in, yeah. So that's how close they are. You know, think about if Ohio State and Michigan were a 15-minute drive apart.
Yeah.
Or Alabama and Auburn were 15 minutes apart. So it's just, that's what's crazy. To me, it's the greatest thing about the rivalry is the geography of it.
Right, so there's this border aspect of it, this Springfield-Shelbyville aspect of it, this sort of like eternal state of tension where you might walk into your local bar and see the guy you hate the most. But like the Tobacco Road nomenclature here, Ryan, I also just want to explain that for people because why is that? What is that?
Well, so Tobacco Road, when I was a kid, again, not that long ago, but you would drive into Durham, you could smell the tobacco. All the old warehouses that are now being turned into loft apartments, you know, in downtown Durham, those were tobacco warehouses. You go to a Wake Forest game in Winston-Salem. The damn city is named Winston and Salem. It's where they made the cigarettes,
admittedly,
right?
I had never thought about that till just now.
It's where R.J. Reynolds, is headquartered to still headquartered, whatever they're calling it now. And so, I mean, I covered the Winston Cup Series in NASCAR. You know, every banquet I went to was on Tobacco Road. So, and they grow all the tobacco just east of Raleigh. Still do. That's why it's Tobacco Road. And those four schools, the Big Four is what we called it, you know, back in the day, those four schools are all, I mean, from Wake Forest on one end to NC State on the other end, you know, you can make that run in about 12 parsecs. I've done it before. and you can go to, if you want to time it out, you can go to four basketball games or four football games, high level college sports in one day, and that's the world I grew up in. And it's beautiful, but it also naturally grows a lot of hatred.
So let's talk about this hatred, Ryan, because I am in awe of it, and I understand that you're kind of the perfect impartial juror to evaluate it as this NC State fan, as this member of the Wolfpack who hates both sides here. So let's just start at the beginning. Like, I get that Duke and Carolina have faced each other by now hundreds and hundreds of times going back to 1920, but when does this rivalry to you really begin, like, for real?
Well, to me, it's 1961. There's a famous fight. You kids out there can Google it on the YouTube machine. And Art Hyman played for Duke, and Larry Brown. Yes, that Larry Brown. the one that you all know that's coached every school in the world except for Carolina, even though he was attached to that job a million times. They had a big fight in 1961.
Yeah, I just looked this up on YouTube, McGee, and it is so old that there is actually no sound of it. It's just like this silent film.
Now, I'm not that old. I don't remember that. But my father certainly has told me about it, and my elders have certainly told me about it. And then you get into the 1970s, and Dean Smith has really got Carolina basketball rolling.
And time runs out. It's an 8-point victory for North Carolina. Tar Heels are celebrating now their victory in the Atlantic Coast Conference Tournament. They have defeated Duke University. I think Dean Smith had this team prepared so well.
And Duke had a pretty nice run, you know, in the late 70s. But to me, where this really took hold is when Mike Krzyzewski comes to Duke. The knock on Dean Smith at that point was he wins a lot of games. He wins a lot of ACC championships. Can't win a national championship. And so when Mike Krzyzewski arrives and Carolina finally wins a national championship in 1982, NC State wins a national championship in 83, and then Duke makes their legendary run with our boy Jay Billis to the Final Four.
Duke is on their way to Dallas. The Blue Devils, now with a record of 36-2. They've won 20 straight.
That's when it arrived, because Duke was a novelty to Carolina fans up to that point. But when they went to the Final Four and suddenly they're making it to the ACC Championship every year, now it matters.
So Billis, young Professor X himself, and the Blue Devils make it to the Final Four in 1986. What do you remember from that era? What do you remember from watching those ACC teams playing around that time?
For me, the greatest memories of ACC basketball in the 80s weren't even the games I was fortunate enough to attend in person. And I went to games in all the great arenas, you know, Tobacco Road as a kid. But it was, back then, the ACC tournament kids, you had 3 days. Friday, where you played the first round, you had semifinal Saturday, and you had a championship on Sunday. Well, that Friday, growing up in Raleigh, North Carolina, no one got anything done. Because even the teachers, like, would have a race to check out the old tube TV strapped to the top of the VCR cart.
Oh, man.
And they would roll that into the room and stick their rabbit ears on the top. And it's Jefferson Pilot, baby. We're watching JP coverage of Lenny Bias in Maryland versus, you know, Michael Jordan in North Carolina live from the Omni in Atlanta.
Do kids even appreciate the institution that was the AV cart?
Oh, we did. One of my favorite teachers. My writing style is still very much based on what she taught me. Mrs. Wainer. My senior year, you know, high school literature teacher refused to bring in the cart.
Oh, no.
On ACC Tournament Friday. So that would make you appreciate it. And then my friend Wes Durham, who, of course, his father, Woody Durham, was the voice of North Carolina basketball forever. Wes grew up near me, right outside of Raleigh. And their principal at his school, I think it was at Apex, North Carolina, he would actually, like, open up the microphone to the PA system and put it up next to the television, and it would just blast over the speakers all day at the school.
He goes, "Good morning, Vietnam," with the ACC tournament.
Yeah, yeah, because it was important, and to me, it made it all feel so much larger than life, and it was.
So with all of this as the pretext, the theatrical backdrop for hatred here, I do want to know, as an outsider, like, who's in the cast of villains here to both sides of the equation? Like, who are the Hatfields, who are the McCoys that are most triggering to either side, Duke and Carolina?
You know, the Duke players that are most hated, the ones that still, if you walk into a sports bar in Chapel Hill and mention this name, are you going to get punched? Danny Ferry, to me, the forgotten greatest, one of the greatest players in the history of Duke. Woj.
Steve Wojciechowski, the singular syllable that you just mentioned there.
Yes. Grayson Allen, J.J. Redick.
Yeah.
Bobby Hurley is certainly on the list. Cherokee Parks. And I'm telling you, there's a pattern here.
Yeah, I'm noticing. I don't want to profile here, but I feel like I have to profile here.
Oh, no. It's this is not my description. This is the description that I would receive if I texted any of the hundreds of Carolina graduates who are in my telephone, and their response would be, "Oh, no, those are the douchey frat-looking guys."
Yeah.
It's who they are. I mean, and as my brother called them when we were kids, it's the floppy-headed guys. It's the guys who had to fix their hair before they shot the next free throw.
Just in JJ's case, we love JJ, but also he acknowledges he was an asshole at Duke. I mean, the gel, all of it.
They
he
all
gets
know.
It.
No, that's the thing is they all know. And then, you know, then the flip side of that is I would say that you can, you know, North Carolina gets their own because, you know, we're talking about Tyler Hansbrough, right? There was a guy named Steve Hale back in the 80s that was one of the most hated guys. And the reason was because he would stand at the, this is in the 80s and the 90s now, they would stand at the free throw line and literally fix their hair between free throw shots. And that's those are the dudes that you hate just when you're in college. Just when you just see those guys walking around.
Right, just a bunch of prom kings.
Yeah, just a bunch of prom kings. Exactly right. And guess what? I mean, you know, Eric Montross, who is literally the nicest guy you'll ever meet. And to this day, he does a great job as the color commentator on UNC's basketball network, the radio network. And to this day, they hate him. You would think it would be Michael Jordan, right?
Right.
I mean, you would think it would be Grant Hill. It's not. There's a... there's an absolute stereotype that exists for a reason, and it's hated on both sides. However, it is certainly not exclusive to the stereotype. I mean, when I start, you know, throwing out some other names, I mean, Rasheed Wallace, Sean May, there's certainly some guys that don't fit into that stereotype. The reality is, if you're doing a 1 to 100 power rankings, I'm going to say probably about 86 of them are all going to look very similar. Yeah, somewhere Shane Battier is listening to this, and he's going, why am I not on this list? And he is. He's just not at the top of the list.
So let's get to the guy who is undoubtedly, McGee, at the top of this list. The guy who I think has been hovering over this entire discussion. Who is he and why is he clearly number one?
Well, Christian Laettner, I would argue, is one of the most divisive figures in the history of college basketball.
They throw it the left of the floor. Laettner catches, comes down, dribbles, shoots, scores!
And I guess divisive, admittedly, is kind of like a kind euphemism for what you really mean there.
Yeah, what I mean is people hate Christian Laettner. We even made a movie about it, right?
Yes, I mean, literally called yeah. I Hate Christian Laettner, a 30 for 30.
Which I should have been paid for per the appearance, because every March, that thing, all of a sudden my phone starts ringing up. I was like, who's this guy that sounds like you but doesn't have a beard in this 30 for? I'm like, that's me. But Christian Laettner embodied Duke basketball, and he was hated throughout college sports.
People make a big deal of things. They need something to identify you with. For me, it happens to be competitive and arrogant and whatever. I definitely am in some ways.
He's still hated. I mean, he'll be the first one to tell you that. But the reason he was so reviled still is in Chapel Hill, not just because he was good, but because he symbolized what Duke is to so many native North Carolinians. I'll give you an example. So when North Carolina defeated St. Peter's, the Cinderella story, to yes. make it to the Final Four.
Last Sunday, yep.
Right, a great friend of mine, Matt Bowles, who's a videographer. I was with him in the first round of the tournament down in Greenville, South Carolina, following Duke. He's a North Carolina grad. And he posted on his Facebook page, he said, well, now we have to play back-to-back New Jersey schools. That's how North Carolinians feel about Duke, because the makeup of the student body is largely not from North Carolina.
Yeah.
And Christian Laettner is so not from North Carolina. Now, if you know the real rosters of the Tar Heels, those aren't North Carolina teams either. But they did have James Worthy and Michael Jordan and Brad Daugherty and guys who were from North Carolina. But that's just what they love, you know. These are foreigners, right? I mean, these are carpetbaggers. Who are these Yankees that are down there at Duke? We don't know those people.
Stolen valor. Yeah, they're stealing Carolina valor.
Yeah, and then you got Duke fans like my grandfather, God rest his soul, Marshall Cadell. He pulled for Duke because he was a Methodist. And by God, Duke's a Methodist school. And then his quote was, it's a sad frog that can't pull for his own pond. And so there's so many layers to it. But to me, the reason that Christian Laettner was so hated wasn't that he was one of the greatest, if not the greatest, college basketball player of all time. It's the fact that he had the hair and he had the chiseled jaw and he kept the sweater tied around his waist.
Yes, he was the John Hughes villain.
He's Duke. If John Hughes was writing a movie about Duke basketball, he would have created Christian Laettner. And we had him in real life and still do. And, you know, he gets booed at the RDU airport, for heaven's sakes, to this day.
Right. I mean, it does feel like growing up when I did in the mid to late 80s, like, yeah, it wasn't just North Carolina, like the rest of the state. It was the entire country recognizing in their bones that this was a guy who might have stuffed you in a locker at some point.
Well, listen, when the 30 for 30 came out several years ago, my wife, who could care less about sports, she was so excited to watch that movie because she had such a huge crush on Christian Laettner. It made me mad. My wife, you still have a crush on this guy?
He's a handsome man, Ryan. We have to admit at least that much.
That was the problem. Not only would he beat your tail on the court, he would probably steal your girlfriend when the game was over with.
Then he'd flip his hair in your direction.
And then he'd win a national championship and then play for the Dream Team or carry luggage for the Dream Team.
I was going to say, we can all admit also that he was mostly just a mascot for the greatest basketball team in the history of the planet Earth.
He has one more Olympic gold medal than either you or myself.
Yeah, also that. After the break, I do want to re-examine a more recent point in Duke Carolina history and what all that humiliation we saw at Cameron Indoor might be telling us about the rematch this weekend.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely. Drink wisely.
So, Ryan, we're in the final act of Coach K's 42 years at Duke. I mean, this is the all-time winningest coach in men's college basketball history. He has more Final Fours than anyone ever, passing John Wooden himself over the weekend. So how does Carolina feel exactly, UNC feel about Coach K?
I don't believe that Carolina fans, true Carolina fans, have ever or will ever pull for Duke in their life. I mean, I once attended a Duke exhibition game against a team from Eastern Europe back in the 80s, and a handful of Carolina fans showed up just to pull for Czechoslovakia. I mean, it's what this is, right?
In the 80s, notably.
However, I do know for a fact that more than a small group of North Carolina fans were quietly rooting for Duke over the first four games of the NCAA tournament because they had looked at the bracket. And they had seen, listen, we already ruined Coach K's last game at Cameron.
This is impromptu by me. I'm sorry. Please, everyone be quiet.
And all they're thinking is the only thing that could possibly top that would be to end Coach K's career in the Final Four the first time these two teams play in the NCAA tournament. So Carolina fans publicly will tell you, oh, I never root for Duke. But the reality is when I was down in Greenville, South Carolina, covering that Michigan State-Duke game a couple weeks ago, I was receiving texts from my friends who went to Carolina saying, man, I want them to win because I want to play this jerk when we get to the Final Four.
But hold on here, because I get the whole like wanting to drop an iron curtain on Coach K. I do get that. But in terms of what happened in that game on March 5th, which we'll get to actually in a second here, the prelude to it, I mean, and the reason why it was so delicious that Duke obviously ended up losing, Ryan, I do want to point out that you became an embedded journalist. Explain exactly what you did in and around Krzyzewskiville in the lead up to that last home game at Cameron Indoor.
Well, all right. So again, I'm old, right? I remember when Krzyzewskiville first arrived. I remember watching it on the local news on WRAL Channel 5 in Raleigh when I was a kid going, these people camped out to go to this game? And they had only camped out for a couple of nights. So I did cover the last stand of Krzyzewskiville, you know, as Krzyzewski is head coach. It will be there forever. There's a permanent sign. They're always going to do this. But this was the last day. They camped for 31 nights.
Jesus.
For this game. But they love it that much. And to be a part of, you know, the end, But that's the part the Carolina fans are never going to let go. Even if they lose this Final Four game, they will always, always speak of ruining 31 nights you camped out. And Carolina didn't just win the game. That game was really never in doubt.
And the North Carolina Tar Heels come into Cameron Indoor Stadium on Mike Krzyzewski's final night coaching in this arena, and they hand the Blue Devils a loss.
Well, you got to describe for the people who somehow missed the game itself, the whole fact that it was not merely a last game, but also a family reunion where, like, all of the faces
that
you wanted to punch showed up.
Yeah.
Like, making human palisades, creating a pathway to center court for Coach K.
Final fours, 5 national championships, 3 Olympic gold medals, 1 legendary career. Ladies and gentlemen, your head coach, Mike Krzyzewski.
Yeah. I mean, Ryan, this was so on the nose.
No, it was all the people that we listed earlier in the most hated Duke players list. They were all there. And then the people who hadn't played at Duke, there were the people there who had paid tens of thousands of dollars to be at that game. And, you know, they're Duke grads. And so they're doctors and they're, you know, physicists and they're, you know, captains of industry. And they put down their cash to go to that game. And again, it wasn't ever really in doubt.
No,
it was not a great game if you're a Duke fan. And just you could feel it, though. I was there 3 different times leading up to the game. I was there the day before the game. I was there the morning of the game. College game day was there. You could feel the air kind of have been sucked out of the room, the stress level. And you could see it on Mike Krzyzewski never looks happy, right?
Correct.
He always looks like his underwear is 6 sizes too small. But when he walked out there, his face was red, and the players, they looked tight, and they played like it was tight. I tell you what, all I could think about was, it was several years ago, and Roy Williams was still the head coach at North Carolina. It was a Duke-Carolina game at Duke. And what a lot of people don't realize is, you know, this senior night. And the senior night ceremonies happen after the game, win or lose. And it goes on forever. Well, I remember North Carolina had gone in and upset Duke in the last game of the regular season. And I was sitting in a little media room and I'm on the front row. And Roy Williams comes in and sits down for his press conference. And we're literally, I mean, the arena floor is, the Cameron floor is right outside the door. So we can hear everything. And you hear the speeches going on and, you know, people are crying. And Roy looks at me and he goes, "Hey, what do I hear out there?" I go, "What?" He goes, what are these speeches that I'm hearing?" I go, "That's senior night, coach." He goes, "That's great." That's it. That's all you need to know about that game.
I mean, McGee, I think of the giant L that Coach K had to wear in that last home game at Cameron. I think of Tyler Hansbrough, also the former Tar Heel great, who later got asked, and I don't know if you saw this clip, but he gets asked about what he thought watching that whole ceremony, and he compares it, obviously, to an episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
The only thing I can really compare it to, and I know I'll take some heat for this, is Larry David, the Larry David Show. This season they have a guy that goes to his funeral while he's still alive so people can tell him how good he is. And I thought it was kind of one of those situations. I thought it was funny. Hey, K deserves a lot of respect, but Tar Heel fans, we love that.
The most Mike Krzyzewski thing ever was Mike Krzyzewski saying so many times to us in the weeks leading up to that game that this wasn't about Mike Krzyzewski. But by Mike Krzyzewski saying it wasn't about Mike Krzyzewski, that made it about Mike Krzyzewski, and Mike Krzyzewski knew that. That's all I told me. And the greatest respect for the man, arguably the greatest basketball coach who ever lived. But the lecturing of "don't make this about me," and then as soon as I showed up on campus, there's a huge banner over the door of Cameron Indoor. With his face on it and a giant K.
Yeah, I mean, Ryan,
that was great.
It's not about me, but also we're all gonna wear this merch, these shirts that say Coach K on them.
The Wednesday before the game, when I was up reporting the Krzyzewskiville story, people were just walking around, everyone's walking around wearing those K jerseys that they bought. And they were selling them on a table right there outside of Cameron. But, you know, you can always argue, and I've covered plenty of farewell tours and, you know, retirement tours and all that stuff for different athletes. And you can always argue, well, I didn't want to do this. But at some point, somebody had to green light it.
And also, yeah, no, it's not about me. But as soon as the game is over and I lose by, like, you know, a dozen or so points, I'm going to go to midcourt and grab the mic and not verbally acknowledge or show any respect explicitly to the fact that Carolina just beat us. I'm going to turn this into a bizarre motivational speech.
It's unacceptable. Today was unacceptable, but the season has been very acceptable. And I'll tell you, the season isn't over, all right?
And that word unacceptable, which it was unacceptable, but it wasn't even midnight that night, and T-shirt stores were already selling their merchandise in Chapel Hill that just said acceptable with the score of the game. So it's why it's the greatest rivalry in college basketball.
Which is why we also need to discuss the best way to actually watch the greatest game in college basketball's greatest rivalry after the break.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So, Ryan, it's worth pointing out here that, yeah, Duke and Carolina have not seen each other since acceptable gate. And now they get this matchup that everybody is salivating over. Everybody, even people who don't really care about college basketball because they know what is rare in this game at this point, they know the names and the faces. And so who's more nervous for this? Who's tighter? Which side? I mean, Duke or Carolina in terms of what's at stake here?
I think that Duke is playing loose right now. And this was a team, I saw this team in person in February. I saw them in person again in early March. And then I covered them in the first and second round of the NCAA tournament. And the team that I saw, particularly in that Michigan State game, which was a great basketball game, but the ice-cold way that they put that game away when they were almost put away multiple times early in the second half, that was not the team that I saw in the winter. It's all about peaking at the right time. And so, you know, I think North Carolina has more pressure on it. I think that you had your moment, right? You had your moment at Cameron Indoor, and you're certainly playing way better now than you were 2 or 3 months ago when everybody had huge questions about Carolina even making the postseason. But you kind of had your moment.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult to defeat a team twice when those stages are so big. And this stage is as big as it was in March. This is a completely different level. And so I think the pressure, way more pressure on Carolina at this point than there is on Duke.
Yeah, if you're Hubert Davis, the coach of Carolina, I mean, there is a risk, a pretty singular risk in the fact that, wait a minute, the merch we just printed, that whole acceptable thing, may not hold up, like, you know, not so many weeks later if this game goes the wrong way. And Coach K, for the record here, he said on Wednesday,
you can't go into the Final Four just thinking rivalry, payback, or any of those things. You got to go in. We want to win a championship.
When you hear that, I mean, does any part of you buy it?
No, not a chance. Because I think that what he's saying behind closed doors is 100% different than what he's telling us publicly. He knows it's a rivalry game. They know it's a rivalry game. Trying to tell us all to ignore that is hilarious to me. It's more hilarious than telling us to ignore, you know, all that led up to that game, the last game at Cameron Indoor. You just, yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah, that bright yellow thing in the sky is not the sun.
Yeah, it's not. No, that's just a light, it's just a spotlight. This is the Truman Show. but at the end of the day, it is, I appreciate what he's trying to do. But it also, again, it's a very Mike Krzyzewski thing to try and tell us what we should or shouldn't think going into this when the reality is the rest of the world knows exactly what it is. And yes, it's a rivalry game, and it's arguably, I mean, it's not to me, it's not even arguable. It's the biggest game in the history of the rivalry.
Right. I mean, in some ways, it's bigger than a championship. I mean, if we're just talking about the history of it.
I think back on, again, with my NC Stateness, I go back to 1974, and when NC State won the national championship, you know, people still think they beat UCLA to win the championship. They didn't. They beat UCLA in the Final Four.
Right.
To play for a championship.
It's like the Miracle on Ice, right?
Exactly. You took it right from my mouth. To me, it's exactly like that. You know, no, we did not beat the Russians to win the gold medal. Yes. We still had to win another game. And so, to me, the championship game, if there's ever been a championship game of less consequence, this is probably it, certainly in my corner of the world, because no one's going to remember 20 years from now, who even won the game two nights later. What they're going to remember where I grew up is, and in a lot of places, is who won the game on Saturday night.
And so here I feel like it's useful to quote Herb Brooks from Lake Placid in 1980, because the quote that he gave then feels more closer to the truth of what Coach K is saying in his locker room, which is, quote, if you lose this game, you will take it with you to your f***ing graves.
That's it. That's it. And they will. And if you try to tell them that they aren't, then you've done them a disservice. I mean, I talk to coaches about this all the time. What do you tell them? You know, when everyone knows what the truth is, do you even try to sell them something else? And that's why I say there's no way in the world Coach K is selling anything except that what you just said on Saturday in that locker room, no matter what he says to us publicly. Because I tell you this, Hubert Davis is telling his team that it's the biggest game in the history of the rivalry. I guarantee you they are. Right? That's what Roy Williams would do. It's what Dean Smith would do. And so it's definitely what Hubert Davis is going to do.
But there is also this other aspect of history here, another bit of symmetry, Ryan, that's worth acknowledging, because not only is Coach K, doing the whole Last Dance thing, it's also a game that'll be played in the same building, the Superdome, where 40 years ago, North Carolina won that first ever national championship under Dean Smith that you mentioned. And that's the mythological game, obviously, where a freshman, and I don't know if you've heard of this guy, a freshman by the name of Michael Jordan, hit the game winner against Georgetown.
The time, 18. Shot, Jordan, Michael Jordan, 14 seconds.
What do you think this does in terms of all of the ancestral spirits that are sort of swirling around, and what does that sort of mean to Duke fans?
It's not just the Jordan game. You know, you go back, you do your history on Carolina basketball, and you look and see where some of the greatest moments have taken place. They believe there's magic down there for them. And so, yes, you look and see your history. To go in there where Mr. Jordan hit the shot, and I guarantee you he will be back in the building on Saturday night. I don't know if you're aware of this. Michael can afford a ticket.
Wait, Ryan, I did not even contemplate the aspect of a new iteration of the crying Jordan face.
They will all be there. And I am trying to get verification through my friend Brad Daugherty. He will not return my calls.
In Brad's defense, he's probably fielding a lot of calls about tickets right now.
Now, that tells me that MJ is getting a plane, and he's going to fly around and pick everyone up just like he did for his Hall of Fame induction, and he's going to make sure they're in New Orleans. So, yeah, it's going to be but yes, Coach K, you're right. It's certainly not the biggest game in the history of the rivalry.
So where are you going to be watching this, Ryan? Obviously, you're going to be watching it. Where are you going to be watching it? What do you think? Also, like, you're going to end up watching in this game. UNC is the 8 seed. Duke is favored by 4, the 2 seed. What happens on Saturday night?
Well, I'm not going to watch it with my stepmother because her late husband had season tickets. They actually had a section of the old Carmichael floor like in their house.
Wow.
From Carmichael Auditorium where North Carolina used to play, and I can't take it, you know, watching the game with her. So I am seriously contemplating. I live in Charlotte. I'm seriously contemplating driving a couple hours up the highway to go to the Triangle because I just want to see. I think it's going to be a really close game. And because of that, I kind of want to be in Chapel Hill on Franklin Street just to see how people react. But then I also kind of want to go over to Raleigh, to Hillsborough Street, to my NC State people and see if they're watching the game or if they're like stabbing voodoo dolls with stuff to try to end the game or if they're all just, you know, ignoring it and watching, you know, Disney Plus. I'm just curious to see what the ABCers are doing. But I might go up to Franklin Street and just watch these people in the khakis and the Carolina blue sweaters and see what they're doing.
Right. I love how you prefer, and I get it. Journalistically, I get it. I love how you prefer rubbernecking in some ways to actually like being courtside to this thing.
Now, these are my people, though.
Yeah.
The fandom always fascinates me, but it's kind of, you know, is it looky-loos the right way? I mean, am I the guy who's slowing down to 10 miles an hour on the interstate and sticking his head out the window to see what happened in the accident over on the side of the road? 100%. And I feel like it's only 10 miles. So to go from Chapel Hill to Durham one way or the other, depending on the outcome of the game, might be worth going and watching.
Ryan McGee, thank you as always for wheeling out your AV cart on ESPN Daily.
Thank you, Pablo S. Torre.
I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.